Always look forward to hearing about the annual Wetland Science Conference, and one's coming up, and we'll hear about it today. Larry Mueller here for you, and my guests, Katie Belfus, back with us. She's the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She's on by phone, and also, Katie, are you there?
Here.
All right, good to have you here. And also on the phone with us from Virginia is Cassandra Newby Alexander. She is the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts, Professor of History at Norfolk State University. And her work focuses on Virginia's African American history and the importance of the waterways in the Underground Railroad. And she'll be participating in the conference this year. Both of them are actually our speakers at this year's conference. So, what's on your mind when it comes to wetlands? You can join in the conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Well, and Cassandra, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
It's wonderful to have you with us. And Katie, I'll turn to you first. This conference coming up next month?
Indeed. Just about 3 weeks away now, we'll be having our annual conference in Madison this year. Well, technically in Middleton, but at the Madison Marriott West, February 19th through 21st.
And, yeah, the conference moves around the state a bit.
It does. We move it around so that we can highlight different wetlands around the state and make it more convenient for different members of our audience.
And the theme of the conference this year?
Our conference theme this year is Wetlands Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, and that's a little hint at the fact that one of the other things Wisconsin Wetlands Association is celebrating this year is our 50th anniversary as an organization. And we'll be kicking off celebrations of that anniversary at the conference, and the conference provided a really great opportunity to take a look back at where we were, where we've come, and where we're going in the future with regard to wetland conservation.
And Cassandra, you'll be a keynote speaker at the conference. Talk about your interest in wetlands.
Well, you know, here in the Hampton Roads region of Virginia, for those who are unfamiliar with our area, I'm in Norfolk, and that's where the largest naval base in the world is located. And it's because of the wetlands, because of all these waterways. Most of Hampton Roads is at or below sea level. And so that means that any kind of climate change really directly impacts our landscape. And our landscape for a very long period of time has been defined by the intricate waterway system that we have. And so areas that in your region are classified as wetlands is simply a part of our whole navigational waterway system. And so when you think about the area of the Dismal Swamp, which is in our region, of course, is the largest swampland area, and of course the Everglades down in the Florida area is larger, and it's only larger because so much of the Dismal Swamp was recaptured through timbering as well as simply the reclaiming of the land. Once that area was about 1 million square miles of swampland, and then they began to drain it, recapture the land back in some ways, and transform that. But my focus is really looking at how wetlands not only were used for transportation by native peoples long before the English arrived here, but also by people of African descent as a way of trying to reclaim their personhood, using the wetlands as a way of securing their freedom. And in the same way that the wetlands were used by native peoples to hunt and fish and travel, and of course the English the same way, Africans were using it for that purpose, but also to secure their freedom. And so that's an issue that really hasn't always been looked at when we look at the history of wetlands.
Yeah, I was thinking Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote a book that featured the Dismal Swamp, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And it came out of all of these stories that people were hearing over throughout the 19th century and even the latter part of the 18th century about the role that this particular wetland played in having a place of refuge for people who were running away. And even before many Africans began running away to that area, you had some English people hiding out in the wetlands. These were, in some cases, pirates or criminals or people who simply did not want to be part of the Virginia society.
The mainstream society, yeah. I know the swamp is an area of archaeological study. I don't know if you've been involved in that, but probably know a little bit about what's being found there.
I was so excited at least about 15 years ago when Dan Sayers, who's an archaeologist, was working on his dissertation at the College of William and Mary, and he and I talked quite a bit about his work down in the area because he was determined to actually locate some of these communities of people who escaped and fled to the swampland, and they call them maroon communities. And he was determined to find them, and actually did. And he is a brave soul, because going to the Dismal Swamp in the summertime really requires some fortitude.
It is and mosquito repellent.
Oh, well, you know, the mosquitoes are the least of your problem. You know, you have the ticks and fleas, you have the chiggers, you have all kinds of insect and reptile life that exists in the swamp. And I've taken teachers down there just on the pathway that North Carolina has, and it terrified them because they knew what was in the swamp. And so it's a very foreboding place to go. And Dan Sayers still goes there every year doing archaeological research, and he has found at least 20 maroon communities, separate communities throughout the swamp.
Very, very interesting. Well, let's take a call. Alice in Sheboygan, we're going to give you a chance. Thanks for joining in.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, Alice. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my line is probably one of the things that I'm most interested in the state of Wisconsin. I'm 65 and have watched this beautiful state lose wetlands. I grew up on the west side of the state, Sparta area, and the wetlands, my father taught me just how important they were to everything. And I've seen the increase in flooding as we pave over, fill in. And I just wanted to comment that it's such an important sponge for us in this world, and that we really have to value them.
Well, Alice, I thank you very much. Katie Belfus, maybe you could comment.
Well, maybe you should have Alice on your show next time, because she just did a terrific job of explaining one of our biggest challenges with regard to wetlands in Wisconsin. And we have lost more than half of our original wetland acres in Wisconsin. We're doing better than some of our neighbors who have lost a lot more than that. For a very long time, we thought of wetlands as wastelands. They were places that we should reclaim, as Cassandra was mentioning earlier. And as we have learned more about ecology and systems, we've learned that they do really provide critical services to our communities, including flood abatement and water cleansing, and not to mention the wildlife habitat. So the fact that we've lost so many does cause an increase in some of the problems that we see with regard to water, quantity or quality, in our state. So our work as an organization is really to help everybody in the state get to where Alice is, which is, we need these wetlands, and we need to restore ones that we've lost and protect what we have.
How many acres did we have originally, and how many are, you said about half of what we originally had?
Yeah, the quantity that I remember is 10 million, and somebody out there is going to call me on that one, but that's what I have at my fingertips right here.
10 million now, or 10 million?
Originally.
10 million originally, and so now we're sitting at around 5 million.
Something like that. I'm going to have to look that up, Larry, because I'm going to be embarrassed if I got that one wrong. But let's keep talking.
could I also chime in on...
Cassandra, go right ahead.
Yeah. So in the Dismal Swamp a few years ago, because the Army Corps of Engineers continued the work of creating a whole lot of canals throughout the Dismal Swamp and thereby revealing a lot of the peat moss that no longer is soaked in the waters, they accidentally started a fire there.
Ah.
And the fire consumed a huge amount of the acreage in the swamp, and the fire burned for 6 months. It wasn't until we went into our wet season and the constant rains drenched the fire that it was put out. And it was because the canals pulling off, leaching that water off into the canals, exposed land that was supposed to be part of the wetlands. And of course, with a fire, it would just continue because in some places, the peat moss is 6 feet deep. And so it just created a lot of problems. And this was the second in maybe 25 years that a fire was set off in the Dismal Swamp, resulting in the same thing.
Wow. And the original size of the Dismal Swamp was what, and what is it now?
It was about 1 million acres, and it's about 110,000 today.
So about 10% left.
Yes.
About 10%. Wow. Yeah. Katie,
hey, Larry, can I chime in there and just say the fire scenario that she just discussed happening in her part of the world, it has happened here in Wisconsin. Even our own Horicon Marsh experienced fires from dried out peat from drainage.
So what's happened here as well, what is the largest mass of wetland that we have? I was thinking about as in comparison to the Dismal Swamp.
Yeah, well, our landscape is more variable. I mean, just with they're right along the seacoast there, so it's lowlands, and we have a lot more topography, so our wetland systems are just different. You know, Horicon Marsh is quite large and was historically quite a bit larger than it is. The Cacogan and Bad River sloughs up north, and a lot of our riverways up north are quite large and hold a lot of wetlands.
Yeah, so we'll talk some more about our wetlands. We'll talk some more about, I think it's really interesting, fascinating history of the Dismal Swamp as well with our two guests, Cassandra Newby Alexander and Katie Belfast. We'll be back right after this look at the news, so you stay with us. We're taking a look at wetlands today. Larry Mueller here for the Ideas Network. Our guests are Katie Belfast, the Outreach Programs Director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Cassandra Newby Alexander. She is the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and a Professor of History at Norfolk State University. Her publications focus on Virginia's African American history and the importance of the waterways in the Underground Railroad, among other things. So, why are wetlands important to you? Do you have a question about wetlands? I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Katie Belfast, just as we were breaking for news, we were talking about the size or what's left of our wetlands here in Wisconsin. And what are your thoughts on retaining? Can we retain the rest of our wetlands?
That's a very interesting question. First, I want to say I fact-checked myself during the break, and 10 million acres is the original estimate of Wisconsin wetlands prior to losing about half of them. So I was right, and I just wanted to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of retaining the wetlands that we have, we need to do that, and one of the challenges is that we can't look at wetlands as isolated entities. They are part of our water systems overall. They are critical parts of watersheds. And when we look at parts of an ecological system as separate entities, we miss the fact that things are connected and that things affect one another. When we build on land, even if it's not a wetland, but it was a key part of the watershed feeding the wetland, we affect the amount of water and how the water is coming into that wetland. So if we want to talk about retaining the wetlands we have left and restoring the wetlands that we have, we need to take a watershed approach to that. And the beautiful thing about that is that wetlands can really be solutions to some of the challenges that many of our Wisconsin communities are facing. We saw unprecedented flooding this last summer, not only here in Madison, but in many regions across the state. And we've been doing some work to study whether there's a relationship between the loss of wetlands or the condition of wetlands in a watershed and how much that watershed experiences flooding. And it's early yet, but we do see signs that there is a correlation between that. But if we can restore wetlands in key locations and maintain the wetlands that are there, we can actually address some of these challenges, whether it be water quality or flooding.
And, you know, Paul in Cross Plains has a question that relates right to what you just mentioned. Let's go there. Paul, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Larry. What I'm curious about, I have some farmland in Cross Plains, and it was previously a wetland. Two heavy springs run into it, and over the years, it has been drained and tiled, and now with the most recent rains, it's a losing battle. I would like to be able to investigate returning it back to a wetland, and there seems to me that I've heard about a program that will purchase land and designate it to be wetlands in perpetuity, but you continue to own the land, and they purchase the right to return it to a wetland from the owner of the land, and I don't know how to find out about such a program.
Paul, thanks a lot for calling. Katie?
Sure, great question. I believe the program that you have heard about is the Wetland Reserve Easement Program, which is run by the Natural Resources Conservation Service, NRCS. And that there is the government, the federal agency, takes an easement on the property that protects the wetland in perpetuity, and in exchange covers all or some of the restoration costs of those acres. So it's a good way to be able to afford a wetland restoration process, because that can be sometimes quite expensive. So reaching out to the NRCS is a great choice. We can certainly connect you with those folks. We have actually a whole series of pages on our website, wisconsinwetlands.org, specifically targeted for wetland landowners such as yourself, Paul, to help connect you with information and resources to help you manage and care for and restore your land.
Paul, does that help out?
So go to the wetland site, Wisconsin Wetlands, on the Internet, and I would be able to follow that and determine who would be helpful in this.
Yep, under the Learn tab, there's one that says for landowners, and that's where you'll get a lot of information, including how to contact the NRCS.
Paul, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call and email us at ideas@wpr.org. And by the way, we have a link to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association website on our wpr.org/Larry site. So you can go there too, wpr.org/Larry, and you'll get the link to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And Katie and Cassandra, you're both speakers at the upcoming conference. Before we get too far, I wanted to maybe, Katie, you can start and talk about what all people are going to learn about at the conference.
Sure. The conference is primarily geared towards a wetland professionals audience, although we have a lot of landowners and other wetland enthusiasts who are not professionals who come and learn. We have everything from presentations about current research and projects that have happened and new approaches and techniques for restoration and management. We also have a series of workshops for folks, wetland soils, one even about conservation dogs and how we can train dogs to help us in our conservation and restoration efforts in wetlands and other communities, and a number of different offerings. While the conference is a two-day affair, we have two events during the conference that are open to the public, so you don't need to attend the conference in order to be able to come to either of these events. One is on Tuesday evening, the 19th, and the other is Cassandra's presentation on Wednesday evening, February 20th. And both of those are open to the public, and we invite anybody to come on down.
And Cassandra, what specifically are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about the role of the Dismal Swamp in our region, and especially the way that this particular wetland was used not only in terms of transportation of goods, but also transportation of people, those who were freedom seekers who were using the swamp as a way either to hide out as they made their way to the Norfolk Harbor to get aboard a ship and find freedom outside of Virginia for many in the north, like Philadelphia or Boston or other places. But also those who chose to live within that wetland to make homes for themselves and their children, and how they were able to do that. And, you know, for many people who visit that, you know, it does seem a foreboding place. But at the same time, for people who live in and around the swamp and have lived there generationally, and some of these individuals were probably the descendants of Maroons who live within the swamp. They've been drinking the water, the groundwater around the swamp, and because of the peat moss, you know, it creates a tannic acid. And that particular acid actually provides a barrier to mosquitoes and other kinds of insect bites. And so there's a lot that we can learn that comes from the water, the wetlands and the groundwater, and this synergy between our environment and human beings living in that environment that can teach us a lot about survival as well as how to thrive in a much better situation. And so I'm going to be speaking on all of those particular issues.
Sounds fascinating. I want to give Dave in Clark County a chance to join in as well. Dave, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm fortunate enough to have my own wetland. I own 40 acres in Clark County, and on this 40 acres, there was a quarry, an abandoned quarry, which they eventually blocked it up. But I talked to a number of people in a DNR how I could make my wetland out of it. And so I have a water control system there, and I did a drawdown for 2 years, which brought the vegetation up. And I've been doing this for the last 3 years. And the amount of wildlife is incredible. It's a great place to go down and watch.
Oh, sounds wonderful, Katie.
Sounds terrific. Can I come visit? That sounds really fun. There are, you know, he was talking about water control structures, and that's one really important technique in wetland restoration. What we like to say is when you're trying to restore a wetland, you want to look at what the historic conditions were in that area before whatever changes have occurred, see how that used to function, and then try to do your best to get it back as close as you can. You're not going to undo the quarrying that occurred there, but a water control structure can provide some of the, as close as we can get it, to the water conditions that might have existed in that area before the quarry. So well done, Dave, and I'm so glad that you're enjoying all the wildlife that happens out there because of your efforts.
Well, thanks, Dave, very much. Appreciate your call. Well, Mike in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hey. My question is just on the loss of wetland acres over the over the last 8 or 10 years. Has it been annually, or and how much? And also, one thing that bothers me about these conferences is people fly. So many people fly and create greenhouse gases, and that adds to the warming that we're losing all this shoreline and wetlands from people flying. Do you keep account of how many greenhouse gases are resulting from these conferences?
It's certainly something we have looked at. We most of our conference attendees are coming from the Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, Michigan area. So I think Cassandra and our other keynote speaker, I think, are the only people flying in for the conference. But driving has its impact, too, and we have looked into offsetting that and are continuing to figure out the best way to do that, because I share your concern. And I also believe that there's a value to the knowledge that people gain and the connections that people gain from coming to the conference that will improve our ability to restore and care for wetlands. So it's a balance.
Yeah, there's some trade-offs.
Yeah, and as to the loss of wetland acres, the significant losses happened early in the 20th century, and that's a lot of that was draining of wetlands for agriculture, and as our communities have grown and developed, and the overall the sort of annual loss of acres has gone down since that early time because we have important wetland laws both at the state and federal level that limit what people can do on land that's wetland. And that's actually, if you don't mind, Larry, can I just talk a minute about mitigation?
Sure.
Wetland mitigation is something that's part of both state and federal law. It's the idea that if you have to impact a natural wetland for some purpose, then you are obligated or encouraged in some cases to, quote-unquote, replace those acres that you are destroying with a wetland in a different location. And that's better than doing nothing, but all of the research I have seen shows that mitigated wetlands, created or restored in response to, you know, a mitigation requirement, they don't do the same things that natural wetlands do. At least they can't yet in the time period under which we're studying them. Even after 20 years, restored wetlands just aren't as good. Mother Nature is better than we are at building wetlands. We are getting better, and wetland restoration is critical, but we can't rely on mitigation as a solution to our problem. It's a last resort when we have no other choices.
Let's take another call. Bill and Antigo, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, like your show. I just had a question about what is the formal classification of a wetland, and how big is our watershed here in the northern part of Wisconsin? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right.
The sort of regulatory definition of a wetland involves three characteristics. Is there water at or near the surface of the land for all or part of a year? Are there soils in that area that are designated as wetland soils? Because certain unique kinds of soils develop under wet conditions, and even if they're no longer wet, you can still understand and see that they are those wetland soils. And the third is whether there's plant life growing in that area that indicates wetlands. There's certain plants that are adapted and are associated with wetlands. So when you see the plants, you have an idea that you've got a wetland or a damaged wetland, but a wetland nonetheless. That's the sort of formal classification if you have those factors. Hope that answers the first part of your question. I would need to know more about where you are. Watersheds don't follow political boundaries, and so we have to look at nature. I just need to go take a look at those maps to figure out what your watershed is. But we'd be happy to help you with that, and there's a number of resources we can point you to as well.
Yeah, that caller was the Antigo area, but you kind of need to take a look at the maps before you can figure it out for sure. Patricia in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Patricia.
Hi there, Larry and guests. I found it interesting to hear the guests speak about the Dismal Swamp because several years ago, the Nature Conservancy magazine put out a feature article on it, and I regret not retaining that issue because the illustrations of the Dismal Swamp were so beautiful in there. Anyway, I also am interested in the history of the Horicon Marsh because now, yes, there's water there, but from what I understand, it was drained at one time for agriculture purposes. So was it just left to for the rain to reflood the area, or did they purposely come in and reflood it?
You're exactly right. The Horicon Marsh has a very long and sort of sad history, in my opinion. I mean, just in terms of what the resource was originally and how much of a hammering it took when we tried to drain it and use it for agriculture. It was just land that just wasn't meant to be farmed. It's too wet, and none of the efforts, the extraordinary efforts that they went to drain that land, ultimately with no success. They have and continue to do a huge amount of work to restore that area. When you dig big, deep channels through a big wetland, it takes a long time to repair that damage, and it's very, very expensive, sometimes prohibitively so, to do a full restoration. So they do lots of different techniques and are working very hard to make the best of what they have and can continue that beautiful site.
And in terms of the Dismal Swamp, Cassandra, are there a lot of efforts to keep the swamp as intact as possible?
There are now. In fact, when the final timbering company closed their doors, both the Commonwealth of Virginia and the state of North Carolina made sure that they established clear parameters for the swamp. And so the swamp is actually shared by both of the states, and it is part of the state protected lands. And so what remains is now protected, and the Army Corps of Engineers is tasked with making sure that that land is continues to be a wetland. The problem, of course, is that starting in the 18th century with the Dismal Swamp Company, they created, and George Washington was a part of this initiative, they created canals, the first canal to connect the swamp with the Albemarle Sound in eastern North Carolina. Was called the Washington Ditch, and that ditch could carry a flatboat all the way to the swamp and eventually to the Norfolk Portsmouth Harbor. And so they were introducing waters that were salt water or brackish water into this freshwater environment. And that also helped to kind of begin to change some of the dynamics. But since then, even though they didn't close that waterway system that connects everything, it is a little bit better managed, and there is an effort to try to preserve the land and, of course, protect the wildlife in that inhabit that land.
It's going to be an interesting talk, I'm sure of that, that you have at the upcoming conference. And Katie, in our last minute or so, maybe you could talk again about the conference, the dates and cost, and what people are going to learn.
Sure. The conference is February 19th through 21st at the Madison Marriott West. Two public events are the Tuesday evening and Wednesday evening, and the conference itself kicks off formally Wednesday morning. You can go to conference.wisconsinwetlands.org for all of the details, including there's something in the menu system that says banquet that'll give you all the details about Cassandra's presentation and how to get tickets for that event.
And so you need to get tickets for that event, though.
You need to get tickets for Cassandra's presentation and the banquet that comes along with that, yes. And we also ask if you'd like to attend the conference to do pre-registration so we can make sure you have food.
And you're a speaker as well. What were you talking about again?
I am a speaker. I figured it's not enough just to organize the conference. I got to give a talk, too. I'm talking about the importance of community and what it means to be a wetland professionals community, wetland lovers community, and how we can collaborate better together to help Wisconsin wetlands more.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have a chance to talk with both of you today. And again, that conference is February 19th through the 21st in Middleton, but in Madison, Middleton area at the Madison Marriott. And our two guests today, Cassandra, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Cassandra Newby-Alexander, Dean of the College of Liberal Arts, Professor of History, and Director of the Joseph Jenkins Roberts Center for African Studies at Norfolk State University in Virginia. Katie Belfus, thank you as well.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
Katie Belfus is the Outreach Program Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And by the way, we have on our website, wpr.org/Larry, go there. We have a link as well to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association website. So great to have them along and great to have you listening in. Taking a look at tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about the effect of the cold and snow on our plants. That's for Garden Talk tomorrow at 11, so I hope you can join us for that. But you know what? There's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network right through the afternoon. So you stay with us. I'm Larry Mealer.